This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Daryl Wood Gerber. I'm excited to talk to her because she has a wonderful new book out in her Fairy Garden series, and I love it because when I had a garden in England, I used to pretend that I had fairies in the garden. So it's going to be lots of fun to talk to her. But right now, I get to turn to somebody who is really important to Joy on Paper and to me. And I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, because he's here quite often, Jim Lamb. Hi, Jim.
How are you?
Fantastic. And I'm so happy that we're here today to talk about your other persona. Of course, as Jim Lamb, you do our wonderful literary gems that help people learn the elements of writing. And I have had so many compliments from new writers who are starting off and they just don't even know the terminology, simple things that, you know, because, you know, in school, they don't learn that much anymore, if you ask me. But it's so hard, you know, warming when I get these emails from somebody and they'll say, well, you know, I never quite understood what a metaphor was. But the way, you know, Mr. Lamb says it, I understand it. And the inciting incident, I got quite a few compliments on that one. So I just want to thank you so much for doing the Lit Gems for us. They're really well received and very much appreciated. But of course, today we're going to talk to your other persona, your poet persona, as J.S. Lamb. Well, you must be excited that your first book of poetry is out there and it's now on Kindle and it'll soon be in a print version.
Yeah, I am excited because it, as I mentioned, have mentioned to you and I mentioned in the book, about 10 years ago, I started writing poetry, and after 5 years, I just threw everything away. I was so deeply disappointed because the words weren't listening to me. They were doing what they wanted. And so what I did was go and look at some poets I admired and writers I admired and people who wrote about poetry and just started all over. And somewhere in there, things clicked. So it's anyone who says you can just do it overnight I has never tried to cook a souffle, because in many ways that's what a poet is to me.
That's true. It takes practice, it takes a lot of thinking and a lot of planning, but then at some point you sort of get the knack for it. And you certainly, once you started, you know, with this, the words started coming to you, they poured out, and you have some absolutely delightful poems and heartwarming poems and just variety, an eclectic assortment of poetry in this book. Called Dark Fruit.
Dark Fruit. And yes, and the title was really from an article I read in Psychiatry Today about 30 or 40 years ago, which Dark Fruit was a euphemism for depression. And they had a graphic where they took a bowl of fruit and painted everything gray, including the bowl. And that was the best image I've ever seen to communicate that feeling, and that stuck with me, that those two words. And then about 8 years ago, I took the photograph that ended up on the cover, which was a very low light, high res photo of a bowl of fruit my wife had left out. And then I knew I had those two elements, and I knew I had the theme, the thought that would hold the book together.
Well, that poem and all of the other poems are, I think, so enjoyable. And I, one of the things, as you know, because you've been listening to this program for a long time, I always advise writers that they can learn so much from reading poetry, because, as you said, you had to struggle with the words. The words, you know, eventually come, but there's all this process of thinking about them, trying to understand a word coming alive suddenly in your head. And that's what writers have to do. They have to learn to hear let the words talk, and find the right words.
You know, it started for me a book I had. I graduated from the University of South Florida in 77. I graduated from what was then called Pascal Hernando Community College in 75. And one of the books I had for creative writing was called The Three Genres, which was one portion of which was about poetry. And I kept that book. You know, a lot of times you leave school, you get rid of a book. I kept that book for over 20 years before I lost it in one of my moves. And each year when I was at the Tribune, I would read the portion on poetry, because a good headline writer has the same characteristics as a good poet, and that is communicate much in few words. And so that helped me in a real realistic way as a headline writer. But when I went to write poems, it was a whole new education, a whole new level. And it was really sometimes painful, but very rewarding when those words lined up.
Now, when you're thinking, when you start a poem, how does it just come to you? Or do you actually, like, find a spot and sit down and think, I want to write a poem about this subject?
It really starts with an idea. And I'll give you a good example, although it is not in this book. My brother, Doug, when we lived in Pennsylvania, he was probably, let's say he was about 8 years old. And my mother had this beautiful row of flowers. She had the as green a thumb as you could have. And this must have been 50 feet of these beautiful flowers. And people went by and admired it. Well, one day my brother, Doug, God bless him, got a bag of pumpkin seeds and spread those pumpkin seeds amongst her flowers. And those pumpkins grew at various spots. So you had this beautiful, delicate colors and designs of the flowers with these big orange pumpkins that popped up here and there. And that idea had haunted my brain for years, until finally I got the words to portray it, both the happiness and sadness of those two events, because on one hand, my mom's flower garden was ruined, but on the other hand, the wonderful whimsy of these pumpkins popping through this flower bed was just beyond description.
Oh, what a... I suppose in those days, you know, the telephones didn't have cameras, so you could take a picture of it, but it certainly stayed in your mind.
Yeah, that was probably 1956, 57, somewhere in there. So that's over 60 years ago, and I can remember it today as well as the day it happened. But putting it on words meant I could share it with other people.
Well, that's an image that now everybody's going to have in their head, and now we're going to have to wait for the next book of poetry to get that one.
Yes, that's what that'll be the tease for the next book is that book. And my brother Doug may pay me more to not publish it and publish it.
Oh, I think he'll be proud now, and especially if you get a cover, you get an artist to do that. That'd make a beautiful cover.
Yeah, I think you're right. You're absolutely right.
Very, very intriguing. So, yeah, you know, and what's the title of that one?
I don't have it right in front of me. It's probably the pumpkins and the flowers, because I tend to write things that are not too esoteric. I start off with the image and then build the words out to the whole painting. The word painting is done.
Well, you have a lot of great titles. Now, are you? Do you want to read a poem today, or you want me to read a poem?
Well, I have two I'd like to open with. They're both
good.
Very short.
No, that's great.
The 4th of July.
Okay.
The first is called Paid in Full, which, because I'm a Vietnam veteran, I'm appreciative of people who have gave up their time, especially if they got sent overseas in a war zone. It's called Paid in Full. Freedom at the expense of others who gave away their tomorrows to give us our todays.
Wow.
Now, I think of that when I think of the servicemen and servicewomen. But now, this poem, which is a little darker, is called Toxic Talk, and it's about people who I feel manipulate the system using power and money. Toxic Talk by J.S. Lamb. Politics poisons the well, so nobody enjoys the water.
Again, a poem that says so much with so few words. And as I'm looking at it, I am actually looking at it on paper right now. And it's four lines, but those words, just they conjure up an image. And I think it's such a catchy, actually very catchy, politics poisons the well so nobody enjoys the water. We have to make a T-shirt out of that one, I think.
Well, yeah, and it's a sad commentary, but of course, in addition to having a degree in mass communications, I had a degree in political science, so I got to see how the sausage was made sometimes more than I wanted to.
I have
a couple more, one of which I'd like to read next is actually one of my favorites.
Okay.
It's called Flowers, Birds, Knobs, and Dreams. It's the flower, not fertilizer, we remember. It's the bird, not nests, that fly away. It's the knob, not doors, that hold the future. It's the dream, not sleep, that shows the way.
Oh, Jim, I love that one. Well, I love all the poems. There are, I think, 32 poems in the book. They are so wonderful. And there's a wide variety. I love the one about Ogden Nash. I think that's so clever.
Yeah, he was one of the people I read when I was younger and stuck with me. And he had such a great sense of humor, but it was not it was off center by a quarter inch. So that made it wonderfully engaging to readers.
Well, this is an example of what it means to be a poet. You can take any subject and, you know, if you're thinking about it and something comes to you, you can turn it into a poem. I think it's fantastic. I mean, most people wouldn't, think of Ogden Nash, well, that's going to be a poem. But you did, and the poem you created is really a fun poem to read.
Well, I'm scrolling to it now because it's actually the last poem in the book, and that was sort of my homage, if that's the right word, to him, because this is the thing about writers in general, poets in particular. These people come into your life, you're 15, you're 17, you're 20, and you bump into them, and you've never seen or heard anything like that before. And suddenly, it's a part of your memory. It's a part of your life. And as I read, people don't give Robert Frost, the acknowledgments he deserved, because he was like America's poet. And I loved it. You know, in Miles to Go, Before We Sleep, and he was. I think he was not treated as well. And the there's a painter used to be on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post, escapes me now, but he was, they called him, like, with disdain, an illustrator instead of a painter. And I thought, well, isn't that sad? Because more people know his paintings than probably most American artists, and yet he was kind of pushed off to the side. And I think Robert Frost was treated that way. But let me jump in. I have found my poem about Ogden Nash. It's called Goodbye Ogden. And it's just like his life, sad and humorous at the same time. Ogden Nash died from slaw, not correctly, made it all. Funny poet, I hear say, made him laugh back in the day. Composing with agility, using his ability, he mashed words like fresh-grown squash, made it taste like applesauce. Loved a team in Baltimore, though it don't play there no more. Colts, you see, moved out of state, driving Big Ridge much too late. Ogden wrote with playful twist, using noun and verbal list. Letters formed with empty schlub, writing them with boxing gloves. Rarely sad, but often funny, Nash so good that he made money, making words jump lips and loops, teetle dums and chicken coops. Oh, that I could write that well, penning quips that still could sell, snagging fame like Ogden Nash, filling pockets up with cash. Ogden died from eating slaw, not correctly made at all. Wish it had dessert instead, or maybe just a piece of bread.
Isn't it beautiful how much you can tell in so few words? It's a complete story. And as people read these poems, I think they'll have all these images in their head. They'll learn something about life, because you have commentary there within the poems about both joy and happiness and silliness. And I love, that's why I really love this collection of Dark Fruit, because it is, has a wide variety. There's a poem in here that everyone will, you know, relate to, and so many people will say, well, that, you know, that's something that really means something to me. And I think that whether they're reading one of the ones more sort of serious that might touch their heart, the one about you know, your father and mother, there's a poem in here for everybody. And Dark Fruit is now available on Kindle, and people can get it there on Amazon. It's a wonderful, wonderful way to, I think, I was raised with poetry, so my childhood, I was always memorizing poetry. In those days, luckily I was in what was considered a backward school, because it was out in the middle of the country, but the teacher insisted that we learn poetry. And so that's why I think I've always valued each word. And you have certainly, you know, you were in the newspaper business for how many years? 30 years?
Oh, that's over 20 years. At some point I lost count.
So there you were all day long, you know, working with in the newspaper business and publishing and as you said, you know, writing headlines and articles. But always within you, there's this poetry that's been in your heart, and it's come out in this book called Dark Fruit. And I want to encourage people to get it. It's available on Amazon. And then later on, I know the print version is going to come out, and we'll talk about that again. But I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's J.S. Lamb, Dark Fruit. Okay?
Okay, have a great day.
All right, Jim. Thanks again so much for being on Joy on Paper, and thank you for your literary gems, and we're looking forward to getting some more, because I've got a lot of people who have started writing recently, and they are asking me a lot of questions. So we're going to get it all together, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you,
Jim. Bye-bye now. Wow. I love his book. There's so many I love in it, but I will tell you that, sometimes I just giggle when I read some of his poetry, and It is really wonderful. So get it at Amazon. Now, I'm going to have a commercial, and then when I come back, I have a very interesting, it's a cozy mystery with a little bit of fairy dust sprinkled on it, and this is going to be fun to talk to Daryl Wood in a, Gerber in a little while. Okay, let's do the commercials.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with the Z, and I am back, and I am just waiting for my next guest, and I will be talking to her in a little bit. And meanwhile, I want to tell everyone that, you know, I've been thinking a lot about, as I was talking to Jim Lamb about poetry, I've been thinking a lot about writers and writing in general, because I have had so many wonderful emails from you. Those of you who have started writing during the pandemic and have been, you know, you're to the point where you actually got things on paper and you're wondering, what am I going to do next and how am I going to get this all organized? And so I've been having lots of fun actually answering some of your emails. And we might actually do an entire show where I will let some of you call in and we can talk about your concerns and your questions. And maybe I'll pull in Jim Lamb and a few other authors to help answer these questions, because it's so exciting when you're just starting to write and just starting to see your words on paper to know that there's all of this opportunity ahead of you to share your ideas. And so I'm really excited about doing a special program just for you new writers, so that you can ask about, you know, what to do and where you should start. And meanwhile, I want to say to everyone that Rita Moreau, who writes the series, The Ghost in the Camper Kooky Mystery Series, her Audible book has just been released for a murder on Honky Tonk Row. So check out Rita Moreau's latest Audible book, and it's available on Amazon. And right now, I get to turn to somebody who is a little bit of a, well, she's been sprinkled with fairy dust. And I am so happy to welcome Daryl Wood Gerber to Joy on Paper. And we're going to be talking today about her newest book, book number 3. It's called A Hint of Mischief. And it is the new whimsical fairy garden shop books. And I am so happy to welcome you to the program, Daryl.
Thank you, Patsy. So nice to talk to you.
Well, of course, you are an Agatha Award-winning author, and I've known your work for quite a while because I love this other series you have, the cookbook one,
because Cookbook Nook Mysteries in California.
Cookbook
right.
Nook, because I had a little bookshop called the Book Nook.
Oh, great.
So when I first came across Cookbook Nook, I thought, oh, I like that. That's a wonderful series.
Yeah, thank you.
It's really cute. And then, of course, The Fairy Garden. I must tell you that when I moved to England and I had a garden, I had a rose garden, and I had 36 varieties of roses.
Oh, lovely.
It was a real beautiful little garden. And I used to pretend that there were fairies, Irish fairies.
You didn't need to pretend. They were there.
Well, you're right, probably. Because
if you can grow 36 varieties of roses in a garden, you know fairies are around.
Yeah, because it was
a little magic to be able to do that.
It was. It did, actually. And for me, that's this book and this idea. It's just perfect.
Well, thank you. It's an interesting, I do make fairy gardens myself, and for those who don't know what a fairy garden is, it's like doll housing for miniature gardens. and it's just a beautiful craft that is easy to do, and I saw it at a Renaissance fair, and I fell in love with fairy gardening, and I went to a fairy garden store, and as I'm picking out all my little items, I said, oh, wouldn't this be a lovely place for a murder mystery setting? So that's what I created, is having gone to a store, made my first fairy garden, and I thought, I think I could do this, and there were no mysteries with fairies as sidekick sleuths.
Well, I think you hit it right, because tell us about this. I thought the idea was so delightful. You're right. I hadn't come across any fairy sleuths before,
right.
And having been very fond of Tinkerbell when I was a kid. I loved it. I thought, this is clever. Well, of course, you are clever. Because
thank you.
You've been.
Okay, so the way I came about it was as I was making my garden, and I bought this little blue fairy, and I thought, oh, what if she is, a little sidekick? She will come to my person like me. I made myself then the protagonist. I'm not, but if somebody came to me, a little fairy, and said, I can help you solve some crime, what would that look like? And so I searched online to make sure there were no other fairy sleuths out there. And, there are a lot of paranormal or magical things. You've got talking cats, and you've got some ogres, and you've got some gargoyles and witches and ghosts. There are all sorts of things that fall into the paranormal or magical realm. But there were no fairies. And like you, I had always imagined myself seeing fairies. I dressed as fairies for Halloween and everything else. And so I decided that this little Fiona would be a fairy in training who got kicked out of the fairy realm, and she has to help humans solve crime in order to get back to the fairy realm. So, and in order to earn her adult wings, she just has junior wings, and to grow up. And so she became this sidekick. She can't solve all crimes by herself. She definitely needs to help Courtney, who owns the fairy garden shop in Carmel by the Sea. And she just has this delightful impishness and desire to learn. And that's what I think I love most about Fiona the fairy, is that she wants to learn, and so she's eager to read books and learn more fairy magic and develop her skills. She realizes she messed up. And she just wants to get back on track. And I love her enthusiasm for that.
And I love that after a while, I mean, she's real. I'm tell you. You can't convince me she's not. She's there.
Well, you know, what's nice, too, is that she's not the only fairy in the book. There are a couple of others. There are a handful of humans that can see fairies and interact with them. So it's not just my main character who might be Looney Tunes if she could see a fairy. There are others, and it corroborates that, indeed, you know, they're interacting with the fairy world. And for those that don't know Carmel by the Sea, it's this wonderful little town, real town, in California on the ocean. It's where Pebble Beach Golf Course is. And it's known for its storybook houses and its charming little gardens. It only has one post office, and you can't have a mailbox on any of your houses. You have to walk to the post office. And it's to have this magical, charming flavor to it. The streets and sidewalks are cobblestone. It's just lovely. And I figured that's exactly where fairies live.
I think that's true. And you're right. It is a magical place. I've been there many times. I used to live in San Francisco and Los Angeles. So I've been there many times.
I
love it so much. I always found that when you get there, I think it's good for your heartbeat. Because I always find that it's very calming there.
Yes. Yes, well, it's the sound of the ocean, the draw of the ocean, and it's so close to it. And yet, like you said, it's calming because the pace is slower. It's a little village. It's not your high-paced big city. And people, it's all about art. It was established, you know, you're from San Francisco, I'm from the Bay Area. Carmel was established by people that moved down from San Francisco after the earthquake and wanted to create a very artistic environment. So it was artists and authors that created and settled the town, and that still exists there. It's packed with art galleries.
Oh, I hate to tell you this, but many years ago, I had the opportunity to buy a little house right there in Carmel, and it would be so valuable today. Like 40 years ago, if I'd have bought that.
You know what? I think there are a lot of things if we'd bought 40 years ago.
Yeah, but I think in Carmel, it's definitely gone up. Anybody who hasn't been there, they have to visit Carmel at least once in their life because it is magical. So it's a perfect place for this book. This whole series is delightful. And I wanted to mention one thing that I really liked. You have your acknowledgments at the beginning.
Yes.
And whenever I would talk to Mary Higgins Clark, you know, she was on the program many times, and I really loved her.
Yeah.
And we got close over the years we talked about her work. And she always always put the acknowledgments at the front because she said, you know, I want people to know how very grateful I am to everybody who's helped me along the way.
Oh, and I've been helped. Yeah, I agree. I saw her talk, and she was exactly that way, just very gracious at the, you know, yeah.
So I really like that. And I like that you have that cast of characters. I love cast of characters at the beginning of a book. I really do.
Well, it helps, in a cozy mystery. I've created a town, so there's a wealth of people in that town. There are shops and friends, and, you know, you've got your basic five or six people that are close to Courtney, because she's the owner of the fairy garden shop. But there are other people that populate the town, and there are always about five suspects in a book, and there's a victim, and you need to know their names so that, let's say you get halfway through, and someone who was in chapter one now comes in chapter 15, you're thinking, oh gosh, who is that person? Well, if you flip to the front of the book and you say, oh, that's right, she owns the spa, I remember her, and then you can read on, it just doesn't stop you cold. And you're trying to flip back through the book, trying to figure out that name. So for me, a cast of characters, I come from the acting world, and a cast of characters is vital when you're doing plays and movies and things like that. You just have to know who everyone is.
Well, I come from the screenwriting world, and so I'm the same way. I love the cast of characters.
Yeah, there you go. What did you screenwrite?
Well, I was in Hollywood. Three of my spec scripts were optioned.
Uh-huh.
They're still in turnaround.
Okay.
But I did.
Congratulations.
I did write scripts. You know, I would be hired to take somebody's book and write a script And so I had some experience there, sort of like Sue Grafton. You know, she was working in Hollywood at the same time, and she like said, "Oh, I can't stand this work," and that's why she wrote the ABC mysteries. So,
right.
You know, because it's hard to deal with Hollywood people when you're writing a script and then somebody else writes it, rewrites it, and then you know you land up with eight people writing the script. It makes you crazy. So,
oh, absolutely, I totally understand, and that was, you know, I was an actress and dealt with the screenwriter. The reason I got into writing was because I've been told by a seventh grade teacher never to write. You know, you don't have the talent, so don't do it. And I put my pen aside. I mean, I really did. It was, you know, heartbreaking, but it's what happened. So, and when I was down in Hollywood, I live now in Los Angeles, but when I was acting, doing commercials and TV and things like that, I was told in order to be a star, you needed to create your own screenplay and produce it. And I was like, well, I'll learn to write it. I don't know if I can learn to produce, but I'll learn to write it. And so I started taking screenwriting classes, and that really helped me focus on beginning, middle, and end to stories and how to really crisply write something. And at the time, my class, we were all acting out the thing, so at least I got to act while I was writing my screenplays. But it gave me the balance I needed, the ability to write in short form and long form. And then when we moved to Florida, my husband needed to move to Florida for his job, I gave up my acting and I said, okay, now I'm going to write. So I started taking writing lessons, writing classes to learn to write mysteries and suspense, which is what I finally ended up doing. But it was Hollywood that got me there because I had to focus on structure and writing. I didn't become the star I wanted, but that was okay.
Well, it's a great training ground, but you did, I understand, you were in Murder, She Wrote.
I was. I did a nice little stint in Murder, She Wrote. I was a very mean woman.
Oh.
And I had a lovely, lovely scene with I'm going to say her wrong name.
With Jessica.
Jessica Fletcher. she was absolutely one of the most delightful actresses in the world, Angela Lansbury. She was just classy, and I learned a lot from her, and I had a good experience with it. So it was fun.
Well, that's fun. Then you landed up here in Florida.
I did. We ended up in Orlando for a year, and then we moved up to Charlotte, North Carolina, and then all the way up into Connecticut. My husband was working for ESPN, running a division, the college division. And so it took us on a worldwide tour of the United States for about 13 years.
Well, you know, and I landed up on the west coast of Florida. Yeah, I'm broadcasting out of Clearwater, Florida.
Oh, okay.
Instead of Los Angeles, because unfortunately I was very young at the time, and I thought I could sue a studio. Oh boy, don't ever do that in Hollywood.
Don't try to do that.
No.
Okay.
No, you don't try to do that in Hollywood,
yeah,
when you're young and you're lawyer just came out of law school.
Oh my, I'm so sorry.
That was a mistake.
Yeah.
But I'm happy. I love Florida better. It's wonderful. And
is Clearwater near Destin? I've been to Destin many times.
It's on the west coast. I'm looking at the Gulf of Mexico here.
Okay.
And it's beautiful. And if you ever get back to Florida, you have to come over here. You come to the studio. But meanwhile, we are just going to talk a little bit more about this. Your writing, you know, what I love about your writing, and as I was going through this book, one of the things that I noticed were two things I loved. I love that you have quotes at the beginning of chapters.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. How do you go about doing that?
So what you're referring to are the little fairy quotes from different poems and things like that.
Yeah, I love that.
Blessings and sayings. Number one, in order to put those kinds of things in, they should be in public domain, meaning they have to be over 75 or 100 years old. So I have researched old poetry, and if you type in Google, you can pull up, you know, fairy poems, and then I've bought some fairy poem books, and in the fairy poems, in the fairy poetry, and lots of poets have been writing about fairies since the 1400s, so it's not hard to find them, but to find them to where they're whimsical, they don't have to match the chapter. They certainly do not match the chapter of whatever the action is. They're just to give the reader a feeling of fairydom, you know, that whimsy before they start the next chapter. And Shakespeare wrote about fairies and Tennyson wrote about fairies. So I can pull up all sorts of books. And one of my fans sent me a fairy poem book, and that was sweet because I've been going through that, pulling up quotes. And I've tried not to duplicate any in the three books, the fourth book. I've already turned in the fourth book. And so I keep a list, a running list of all the quotes that I've used, check them off, mark them twice. You should see my poetry books. They've got little, post-it stickies all the way through it going, this one, this one, this one. So I use those. And they get me in a mood, and I think they get my reader in a mood as they turn chapter to chapter.
Well, now this is in all of the books you've written. How many altogether? So you're now a really solid.
I've written 28 books. There's the third one in the Fairy Garden just came out, and the fourth will come out next year. I've written 11 in the Cookbook Nook series, and the 12th will come out next year.
Well, your writing is so good. It is so
thank you. You
have really, the imagery is fantastic. I love you have the ability to write long sentences which have a nice arc, and in one long sentence you can tell so much about whatever you're writing about. I like that. I was looking at sort of the words that you're using in your book, and you use a lot of words that really conjure up a vision. Like even a simple word, like she strode across a covered slate patio.
Uh-huh.
You use the word strode. You use the word she fished in her bag. You use words that are so... I'm finding...
To the act?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I, as a writer, I was told very, very early on, number one, eyes don't do anything, only a gaze does something. So I made sure that, my eyes, I can do an eye roll, but eyes don't dart and eyes don't whatever. So I go through my book at the end of my writing process. I go through with like 200 words that I use too often and could be a better choice word. And they're all mostly they're verbs. And some of them are adverbs, so I will go through. Some of them are adjectives. But I will go through and I will look for run or sped and say, is there something else? Did they gallop? Did they lurch? Did they, careen into that wall? Because words are evocative. When you see a word, it really does mean something specifically, and I think it helps the reader, know that, yes, you can rummage through a purse, but you don't want to rummage through a purse 12 times in a book. So what's another word you could use for rummage, which means fish, or to, fetch, or to lift, or it slid my hand in, pulled the thing out, and it slithered because it was a snake. Whatever it was, it's very specific to me to help my writing. I use the word mused too many times, meaning think or thought. And it's like, okay, what else can I use in there? You can mull something over it. You can ruminate is too big a word. People will look at that and go, huh? And they'll stop. I was told by readers that they hate the word glean, G-L-E-A-N. I was like, oh, but glean is so specific when you glean a clue. And it's like, okay, you don't like that one. Well, I can use it once. she sashayed into the room. You know what sashaying is. Well, only one person in the book can do that. So, there's only one person that can sashay. But striding is different than walking. You walk into a room, that's sort of a single pace. You stride into a room, there's purpose with that. You amble into a room, you're really taking your time. So those are the words. I love going through the words and cleaning them up that way. And it's a great way for me to edit, because I'll jump around in the book and I'll find mistakes because, there you are editing it and changing it up. So it's fun.
Your editing process, as you're writing, do you try to make sure that each chapter is in good shape before you go on to the next one?
I try. I read the, like Sue Grafton gave me the idea, actually. She said, I read the chapter that I wrote the day before, and then I move on.
Mm-hmm.
And that does help clean things up. But if I have a rough chapter, meaning, it's just not going well, I may write down in capital letters, fix this scene, fix this chapter, fix this clue. And I'll keep moving. Because I know once the book is done, Mark Twain says, you can't edit anything until it's done, unless it's complete. Okay, so it's like, all right. So I get the book done, and then I know I'm going to go back through it anyway 3, 4, 5 times. So if it's not clean the first time, I'm not that clean a writer. I know some friends that write a book and they turn it in. That's it. I can't do that. I must rewrite, and I love rewriting because I know I can get better words, better descriptives. I can shorten things, lengthen things. I can figure out if it has the right rhythm. You know, this is the screenwriting. You know this. Screenwriting, you might go, oh, my gosh, this is so heavy-handed. It's serious, 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 serious. Where's the joy? And you'll go back through it and go, oh, this scene is too long. Let's cut it up a little bit. Let's add this in the middle. So it just breaks it up for a rhythm. It's almost like a dance. And so that part of writing I love too. I've learned this over the years. My first books, the first books I wrote, they're in a drawer because they were my learning tool, learning curve. And it really helped me when I first got published that I had a good editor. And she really helped me understand. She said, remember, Daryl, these books are for fun. And I went, oh, you're right. She said, I know you like writing suspense, but we're also writing cozies, and cozies are for fun, so make it just a little bit lighter. And I went, oh, okay. And you go back with a fine-tooth comb figuring out how do you get the humor in there, the lightness in there, the charm.
Well, you have a lot of charm in your books, in all of your books, but particularly I think this series, it is just built on charm. And as I said, I am sure, I know that fairies are real when I read this book. It's wonderful. It's really wonderful. And again, I want to tell my... I have quite a few listeners who started writing during the pandemic, and they ask me, who should I read? How can I get better? And I will always tell them, Daryl Wood Gerber, read one of her books, the latest book, not one of her early, but read A Hint of Mischief. It's a wonderful book, and they will learn so much because it is really, your writing is stunning, really stunning.
Oh, you are so sweet. Thank you.
So... again, it's called A Hint of Mischief. And do you have a webpage where people can go?
Yeah, DarylWoodGerber.com. And there is all sorts of stuff there on the fairy garden specific section. Get into the fairy world. There are videos. There are pictures. There are lists of where I get fairy garden materials, all sorts of things, book club questions. Everything's in there.
Everything's in there. And also in the back of the books, you have wonderful recipes, really good recipes. As a matter of fact, I normally do try them out so that I know if the author actually made them. And so you have really good recipes. And I know that at the end of this program, what I need to do, I need to have an Americano. I need an Americano. And I need to go and have one of your delicious snacks because really very clever things. And particularly the fairy cookies, everybody. If you have
fairy cookies and brownies, lots of brownies.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I just want to thank you so much, Daryl Wood Gerber. You're a wonderful, wonderful author. Really a fine example for anybody who wants to learn how to write well. They should be reading you.
Patsy, you are delightful. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you for all being right on Joy on Paper. And I liked that you used the word joy in conversation. Okay. Bye-bye
now. Thank you. Okay, bye.
Wow. I love this book. And as she said, I had, of course, this is the third book, so I had read the other books. And I don't know why I never had her on. Well, you know, it depends. She's a Kensington author. And I get so many Kensington books. So sometimes I just don't hit the right time. But I'm so happy that I got Daryl's book today because this is really a fine example. It's a really so well written, and I really enjoy talking to her. So, wow, what a day. I get to talk to Jim Lamb about his wonderful book, Dark Fruit. And again, for all of you would-be writers or about-to-be writers or both of those books, Dark Fruit, is available on Amazon. a great buy. It's on sale right now. It's a Kindle book. And then Daryl Wood Gerber's book, A Hint of Mischief. It came out on Tuesday. It's a wonderful read. You know, you might, sometimes people say, oh, well, I don't know if I like a book about fairies. But as I said, I actually forgot it was a fairy. I mean, her fairy has become so real that you think it's sort of like, I can think of another author who does that, and that's Carol J. Perry with her Witch City Mysteries. We're right there with Orion, her cat, and, of course, with Rita Moreau and her wonderful Kooky Mystery series. And there she has a ghost named Irma. And, well, you know, I read her books and I forget that Irma's a ghost because she's so real. And that's what happens. And that book, her book, Murder on Honky Tonk Row, just came out in Audible. It's a really great book, and you can get that on Amazon. So your fingers should be busy today on Amazon and getting a bunch of really wonderful books just to put you in a good mood. All of these books will put you in a good mood. And as I said, with Dark Fruit, there is a poem in there for everybody, something that will touch your heart. Anyway, it's been a wonderful, wonderful day for me to talk to everybody. And I just want to, again, remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, like I am hoping for Jerome Preisler and his wonderful book, Civil War Commando. This book should become a streaming video. I could write the script tomorrow. You could sit me down at a Selectric typewriter. I love it. When I was in Hollywood, I had a Selectric typewriter. Oh my gosh, I love this Selectric typewriter. Anybody, if you ever use one, you'll love it. Anyway, I could write that script tomorrow, and that's called Civil War Commando, and it's by Jerome Preisler. And if you haven't read that book yet, you should get it. It's really good. And, of course, I already mentioned Carol J. Perry and her wonderful Witch City Mysteries. And her new book is going to be, it's set right here, book number 2 in the Haunted Haven series. And I love books set right here in my neighborhood. But anyway, that's what I said. Everybody have, did we play my goodbye music? Let's play my goodbye music. Let's say goodbye to Big Ed in the control room. We'll play this. We'll play. I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. Let's listen to this wonderful song.
Another day, I am assured that God will see me through. It's working for my good. It's working for my good. Sometimes.